This episode was uploaded Monday, July 17th, 2023, and you're listening to episode 35 of the 5x5 Room RPG Podcast. Player's Handbook Playtest 6 recently released, and with its arrival comes a large list of changes for many classes, as well as the reintroduction of the Monk and its more inclusive changes. With this release, Wizards of the Coast has made it clear that the latest playtest moves us more to the refinement phase of 1D&D from the more experimental phases in previous playtests. Today, Jeremy and I discuss many of these changes and give our feedback on how the playtest is going, at least from our point of view. Spoiler warning, not every episode is a happy one. The running time for this episode is 54 minutes.
Welcome to the 5x5 Room. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Hollis.
And we are back talking about another 1D&D playtest document. This time named Player's Handbook Playtest 6.
Jeremy, if you can't tell, they listened to your feedback about the title of the previous document, and they said, ignore that guy. We're just going to do the same exact thing again.
They said, increment the number, please. And you know what? Usually we've been trying to do some catching up, but these episodes are running along, so I think we're going to kind of just run right into this one. I'm also going to give you some of my opinions up front, which is unusual, but I got to say, I feel the most disappointed by this document.
Now, that's shocking, actually, because there's a few things in my quick skim that I thought you would have really enjoyed, but maybe you'll get more into that as we dive in.
There are certainly things that I enjoy here. I won't say that it's all bad, but I will say that my takeaway, I have the least to say about this document, despite the fact that it is the longest document we've gotten thus far. And it's just because I personally feel most of this is a retread.
Oh, I can't wait to have that piece of the discussion. Okay, let's dive in.
Well, you know, here's a great place to start. So this covers a few classes. One of the nice things is we get some subclasses. Before, we were getting one subclass for every class. Now they gave us a few. That's pretty cool. And there's specific classes that are in this document. It is the Bard, Cleric, Druid, Monk, Paladin, Ranger, and Rogue. Really a whole lot. It's also our first time seeing the Monk, since the Monk was not included in the Warriors book last time. But here's the Bard coming up first, alphabetically. These are like the patch notes kind of built into the document from the developers, kind of telling us, hey, here's the intention of some of these changes, and here's the big changes that you need to look for when you're reading through this. I'm not going to read all of them. I'm just going to read like the first part of most of these changes. Bardic Inspiration has returned to its 2014 form. Jack of All Trades has returned to second level. Bard subclass now match level progression in the 2014 Bard. Font of Inspiration has returned to 5th level. Counter Charm returns. Magical Secret has returned. Literally, this is the Bard from 2014.
Interesting. So you're saying that it sounds like it's more of a retread of what's already been done with fewer iterations to actually shake things up.
There are quality of life improvements in here. One of the big ones is the Bardic Inspiration. It used to do like a big healing in the last document. Apparently it healed too much and they said, cut that out. We don't want it anymore. It's too strong. But what they did do instead is they said, okay, before when you gave Bardic Inspiration to someone, they had 10 minutes to use it. Now they have an hour to use it. Relatively minor change considering it makes no difference in combat, but it does mean that you could potentially give someone a bonus when you're sitting by the fire. And maybe later, if it's less than an hour, they'll still be able to benefit from it. Okay, it's a nice little change. But that's my main problem with the bulk of this document, is you might as well give me patch notes to the original Player's Handbook 5. At this point, most of the changes that we saw in the previous documents have been thrown out. We are pretty much just going back to the same 5th edition Player's Handbook versions of the Bard in particular, with very, very minor changes. Changes that could have been made in errata that I don't have to pay $60 for.
On one hand, I understand that they're taking the feedback from the surveys that they're asking for. And if a lot of these decisions have been made in terms of retreading old ground and placing things back the way they were back in 2014, then it seems to me that the reasoning for that would be that the vast amount of feedback they're getting is that they prefer that version. They prefer things being done that way. However,
I would say you're right. But go ahead, continue your point.
Well, exactly. So if that's the case, why not just continually provide new content for what's present with the 2014 version rule set? Like, what is the I forget that it is a
money?
Company.
Yep,
I
forgot. You got to make money.
I forgot.
Well, there's a big anniversary here. You got to do something. And they're not going to release a new class. They're not going to release a new anything. Nothing new, because new could be bad. So instead, we'll give you the old stuff. We joked that this was going to be 5.5. This is literally going to be 5.5 now.
Wow.
If they continue down this road, there's nothing but tiny changes that are making the game slightly better. And most of these were house rule changes that people were doing anyway. Were you going to hold it against your bard if it took 15 minutes for someone to use their inspiration instead of 10?
No.
Exactly. These are changes that we would have hand-waved anyway. I'm not going to pay you $60 for that. I will ask, do you think we should go into detail on some of these changes in here? There's also a lot of classes to go through. It'll take us a while to, if we want to go through each one of these changes.
With the subclasses provided, you do get to dive in and take a look at some unique options available to those subclasses. However, those are going to be the elements that I really feel that you're going to have to actually sit at a table and play to really understand the ins and outs of why they are impactful or how impactful they are in general for the table. It's really hard to, for most of these, at a glance, determine if something is overpowered or underpowered compared to other subclasses that we're just now seeing for the first time. Often when Jeremy and I begin to discuss these playtest documents, we even have a bit of a smaller conversation beforehand if it's even worth covering all those changes, because most people, if you're not playing with that class already, you might not even be aware how impactful the change is to begin with.
I mean, a lot of these changes you might not even notice. You might have said, oh, wait, you only had 10 minutes? I didn't even pay attention to that. I can talk about some of the things that I like with the bard, at least. There is the addition of the College of Dance. I have played dancer-type characters in the past. I tend to like them. I think they're fun. And so the bard actually doing a College of Dance, I like it. I'm happy that it exists conceptually. I don't necessarily love how it's represented mechanically, but I think that it's one of those things that we'll probably see a little bit of changes before it comes out anyway. Overall, I think it's pretty good. Here's a weird part of it. They are only fisticuffs. So the College of Dance only gets to punch people. Well, they can use weapons, but they get to use their Bardic Inspiration die size when they punch people. So at some level, it would be stupid for you to attack with a weapon.
I think it's an interesting flavor. The bard's basically saying that if I can catch this beat, you can catch these hands, which I'm always a fan of.
I'm fine with it. I don't like when you keep limiting me. This is one of the problems that I've had with 5th edition in the past in general. And when you give me a single subclass that says, guess what, you always punch things, then every single College of Dance bard is going to look pretty similar. I can have a scimitar on my side. I could have throwing knives. Nope, I'm going to be punching. The idea of scaling their damage off the Bardic Inspiration die, I do think that's interesting. It's a smart idea. Though it is very, very similar to the damage scaling of the monk. The monk gets bonus attacks and extra attacks. Effectively, they made a bard monk.
I'm happy that you mentioned the monk, because of course we have the monk's return. But before we get there, I'm going to use something else you've mentioned for one more additional segue.
Yeah.
You had mentioned you don't like being limited. One key change that appears to have happened is that for the case of a ranger, it looks like a lot of their class abilities have now been relegated to a number of uses equal to their wisdom modifier, which is different.
So in the older documents, they started leaning into this idea that we could have powers that have limited usage affected by proficiency. And the end result that it seems they came up to was, well, the problem is that proficiency scales with character level, not class level. So I can take one level of ranger and I can have 6 uses at character level 19, even though only one of my levels is ranger. Once again, this is one of those times where I say, who cares? Let multiclassing be a little fun. They're always trying to choke the life out of it anyway. I personally don't like tying things to ability scores because they don't change very much. For the most part, if you're playing an optimized character, you're probably starting with a 16 or an 18, at which point your mod is a plus 3, and the highest it can possibly get is a plus 5. That's a pretty small variation in terms of like growth, getting more of something, going from 3 to 5 throughout the entire life of your character. We're talking 1 to 20.
And as you mentioned, you don't like things getting taken away from you. So imagine now having to split those same stats that are so important to now require wisdom as another supported stat to make yourself a more effective ranger. As I mentioned earlier before we started recording, so you definitely need dex. And if you're going to use melee weapons, you're probably going to need strength. Every character needs constitution for the most part. So now you've got wisdom as the now either secondary or tertiary stat that is absolutely going to be necessary if you really want to make sure your ranger has a lot of options available that are part of their toolkit that they come with.
Yeah, I feel like this wouldn't be a problem if there weren't other classes that were so focused. The problem with multiple attribute dependency when it comes to like the ranger or the paladin is that the rogue needs dex. And the rogue realistically doesn't need much else. In older editions, the rogue was your skill mule. They were the ones that could do all of the skill stuff. They could pick the locks. They could stealth. They could, and you needed intelligence for that. In like older editions, your intelligence generated your skill points. The number of skill points you had mean you could have more skills and higher skills. So your rogue was encouraged to be intelligent. However, now my rogue doesn't use anything but light weapons, so they don't need strength. They don't need carrying weight or anything like that. They, I guess, could use constitution in the way that you said pretty much everyone needs constitution. But it's probably best that they don't get hit in the first place, so they're going to stack dex. They can have charisma if they want. They can have intelligence if they want. They can have wisdom if they want. But realistically, they get to stack their skills with expertise anyway. So having those extra attributes isn't really that useful to them. Versus when you look at the ranger, where you're like, yeah, okay, I want strength, I want dex, I want wisdom, and I probably want a little bit of con. Guess my ranger is never going to be able to have a conversation with anyone ever.
Because we had a chance to talk about the monk, I think it's important to mention, surprise, the monk is back. We've returned, Jeremy, in full form. Where it's like nothing ever changed. Or did something from the monk change?
So a lot of wording changed on the monk. That's the big, I guess, the tentpole release of this document is the monk. We are doing everything we can to cut out Asian stereotypes, which, fine. I think it's a good thing overall. They make some weird choices. Like they're like, you can't use the word way anymore. They're warriors. And I'm like, I don't know that that makes much of a difference, but okay. I'm willing to bite. They have discipline points instead of key points. They function exactly the same, but sure, that's fine. It's just a change of wording. And if that wording makes some people more comfortable, then all the better. I will note, they did some nice toning down in a few places. Like they made the stunning fist that the monk could do a lot less easy to rely on. I remember playing in a game where I was a monk and I hit someone with the stunning fist thing and they just kept failing their save. And there was just like a boss character that couldn't do anything the entire encounter. And it was a little anticlimactic.
In an older game that I've run, and don't worry, this wasn't you in this case, I had a player named Steven, and Steven would constantly, as a monk, stun the big bads of the campaign. And even if I had legendary saves, I felt like it was sort of something I had to give them occasionally, because having the ability that never works doesn't feel great for a player either.
That's true. I mean, it comes at level 5, which is also when they get an extra attack, so they still get something. But it is probably a little too strong. Even now, it's still not that nerfed. The only real thing they added was that even if they fail their save, they're only stunned for one turn. And when you start your turn again, their stun wears off. So technically, you could stun them in the next turn. You could stun them in the next turn. You could stun them. They would have to keep failing their con save each time. But it only costs one discipline point. So it's not that taxing to have to do it over and over again. Otherwise, I'm pretty happy with the minor changes in the monk. They kind of beefed up their martial arts die a little bit, which I thought, yeah, that's fine. I like it. They said they can't use their martial arts die with weapons. I kind of dislike that. But they gave them weapon masteries, so I think that's a fair compromise. They can use the weapon mastery with one attack, and then they can punch and do a little extra damage with another attack, and they get multiple attacks anyway, so.
I noted there were a lot of changes to weapon masteries for a lot of the melee classes. Were there any other notable ones that you thought were interesting?
Interesting is one word for it. Okay, so here's where I'm going to talk again about how we are just throwing out all of the changes that we've been making. So a big concept that they were kind of pushing in some of the earlier documents was that there was like these class groups. And we had the mage class group, which was the sorcerer and the wizard and the warlock. And then we have a warrior class group, which was the fighter and the barbarian and the monk. And all the classes fell into one of these class groups. And the idea was that the class group all had something in common. All the priest class group had channel divinity. All of the expert class group had an expertise, so on and so forth. The warrior class group was identified by having the weapon mastery feature that was new to these playtest documents. However, the ranger also has weapon mastery now, and also the paladin. And I was like, wait, so does everyone get it now? It's no longer something that's tied to the warrior class group. They're just throwing it everywhere. They're like, you know what? Just take it. And it was a feat before. You could take it if you wanted it. But now they're just straight up putting it in these other classes.
I noted not only are they putting it in other classes, but of course, based on the class archetypes, they're sort of limiting the fighting styles that can be chosen. I would actually now agree with you even more so. This feels like you're taking away. I get it. Maybe it's the case that the paladin is not the kind of archer that the party needs. But what if I want to be?
Yeah.
If I want to be the sniper paladin and I have spells, but yes, I want to use a bow and that's my primary method of attack.
This is the same thing. My problem with the dancer, the College of Dance bard, is that I can visualize in my head like a dancer bard that's throwing knives, but from a mechanical perspective, someone might say to you, well, why do you need a ranged attack? Because you have spells. And they would say the same to your paladin. They would say, well, if you have a spell that's ranged, it would be inefficient for you to use a weapon attack that would do less damage. But also, who cares? What if I want to do something because I have a mental image in my head of that's how my character would fight? And I think it's the game's job to try to make those things interesting, not just say, well, you know what? Paladins can't use bows. Or they can, but they can't use an archery fighting style.
And the game supports this kind of concept at its core, right? I mean, having these unique ideas, do you think that a elven paladin of Corallon Lorathian would never use a bow? That's just not something that exists within a battalion, army, whatever, that they'd have that skill set. And they would not lean heavily on that skill set as is provided by their country, their place of origin.
Yeah, I mean, it totally makes sense. It fits in a character to have an elf paladin using a bow. But once again, it doesn't fit within that extremely, in my opinion, further narrowing idea of what each class is. And that's, once again, my issue with D&D in 5th edition is that it has just got these ideas of this is what a bard is, this is what a druid is, this is what a cleric is, and those are your only options. Minor thing I wanted to complain about the monk. I still don't know why we don't just call it the Shadow Dancer, because they have like a Shadow Dancer subclass, but it's called the Warrior of Shadow. So whatever. I just, minor gripe. I get that they want them to all sound the same, like, because it's the Warrior of Shadow, the Warrior of Elements, the Warrior of the Hand, but it's a Shadow Dancer. It teleports in shadow, just like the Shadow Dancer did. But while I'm talking about it, I can mention the War of the Elements changed a lot. This was one of the weirder subclasses. You might not have even looked at it. It was one of the original Player's Handbook subclasses, and they had like a list of spells that they could cast with their key points. So they could spend, and there was just like a certain number of spells that they could do, and they had to sort of like take them as a feature, and they each had their own cost. So it's like, oh, you could cast this one spell, but it cost 3 key points. You cast this spell, but it cost 5 key points. And they pretty much scrapped all that. They kind of kept the concept of a warrior of the elements, but they got rid of their ability to effectively cast spells with key points, which it was a really weird and different subclass, so I can understand why you would want to homogenize it a little bit. But it also kind of stood out and was different. I would say it wasn't very good, honestly, because you just don't have enough key points to match up to spell slots.
And again, the sort of way they've redone it, I hate to say this and just keep repeating the same things, Jeremy, but this feels very much like a patch that could have just been placed over the existing way the classes worked. If the primary changes try to homogenize it in a way so that it's more streamlined and has a power level more equal to its other subclass counterparts, okay, just release and quick Unearthed Arcana that is going to flow directly into the new way this class is now meant to work. Update your D&D Beyond page to allow for the new corrected changes, perhaps maybe even just an option. You click a checkbox, and now it uses the UA version versus the existing version of that class subtype.
You would think we already have something like this. It came out in another book that added a bunch of new class features and attempted to rebalance all the classes.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm definitely not on the website right now making those changes.
I mean, in general, like, yeah, a lot of this stuff was pretty minor. The Warrior of the Elements is pretty mechanically different from the, I don't remember what it was called, the Way of Elements, probably, or something like that. But the difference is minor enough that you could have just released this as a new subclass, and people would just use this if they wanted to use it, or they'd use the old one if they wanted to use that. Which, I guess we can talk about that. So that was one of the things I mentioned when I was going through the changes, I'm going to say the reverting of the bard. One of the things that I had read off was, and you'll see this in most of the classes, was bard subclass levels now match the level progression in the 2014 bard, ensuring compatibility with subclasses already in print. So in the older documents, what we had seen was they said, hey, let's make everything work the same. Because what would happen was you had a bard and the bard had a subclass and it would get subclass abilities at specific levels. And then the rogue had a subclass and its subclasses had different levels. Like they were slightly different. Like one would be at 5 and one would be at 4 and one would be at 6. And, you know, they were just like a little bit different. And in the earlier documents before this, they said, you know what, look, we're going to make them all the same. Every subclass is going to get a new feature at this level and this level at this level, regardless of what class it's tied to. Now, a lot of people said, apparently, based on the reception of this document, that how can we possibly use the old classes and the old subclasses if the levels have changed? And if you were to ask me that question, I would say, well, the feature that you got at level 4, you get it at level 5 now. It's not that hard to do. You just,
right.
Just use your brain a little bit. But apparently a lot of people did not like that. And so all of the classes that are here in this, all of them are reverted back so that they get subclass features now back the way they did in 2014, so that you don't have to do any thinking whatsoever when you take an old subclass and decide to use it.
So the level progression is being reverted for the sole purpose of not having to have an additional rule printed. I want to make it clear here, probably a single line printed.
Yes.
That would say, just bump it up one level.
This is like unrelated to the document. But it's something I've come to understand a little more lately. I have a what might be called a weird group of friends, I suppose. We would play these games. We'd play Dungeons & Dragons, other tabletop games. And then one of our players would come up to us and say, hey, I want to run a game. Hey, I want to try this out. Hey, I want to make something. Hey, I want to try a different game. And we would go, yeah, that sounds great. And we would indulge them and we have so many friends that are all like game masters now as a result, because everyone wanted to get in on this thing.
It's true.
But I've also been doing the West Marches game. And let me tell you, players love to play. They have no interest. There's a whole group of people out there. Like I said, my friends are the weirdos, apparently, because there is a whole group of people out there. They just want to play. They're not interested in the rules and the minutiae. They are not interested in running a campaign or designing anything or homebrewing anything. They just want to play. There is a big group of people that just want to play. And when I read this document, that's what I'm reminded of. Is like, okay, that's the biggest portion of the audience of Dungeons & Dragons are people that just want to play. They can hop on, they can get a GM for hire on a lot of websites these days. They can go to their local West Marches group, or they can go to their local game store. They can go to a convention and they can just hop in on a game. And this is created to make it as easy as possible for that type of player. So to say that I, as a player, feel excluded feels a little harsh, but it's how I tend to feel when I read a lot of this stuff. I tend to feel like this is intended to make Dungeons and Dragons the most lowest common denominator sort of thing. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to jump in. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but it's part of the reason why I'm losing interest.
I see the allure on the Dungeon Master side by having such a easy, and I'm going to say in this case, homogenized set of systems that make it really easy for newer players to adapt and start playing. I think that is phenomenal. I'm more like you in that I often like the granularity and the uniqueness of systems, because that's how, to me, a class feels distinctively different, or at least distinctively different enough. Some people might say that the fourth edition rule set, again, led very much to this homogenization of classes. But I'd argue, even with that homogenization, even the subclasses were designed in such a way to where they would start to feel drastically different based on particular choices provided for those classes. And it's kind of interesting how far we've come, where the pendulum has swung in a unique way. We're to the point now where, one edition later, we are taking a conceptualized, experimental way to play the game with new rules, different ways to design classes. We're reverting back to those changes that are all the way back from 2014, but the elements, the core elements that are remaining that are the changes, are actually the elements that are pooled in such a way to help further homogenize from fourth edition. So earlier you called this edition 5.5.
Yeah.
I'm going to go a step further and be a little weird with it. I'm going to call this edition 5.4, because this is fifth edition with the fourth edition concepts added in.
I was going to joke that it's 5.1 because there's such minor changes. But let's try to talk a little bit more about the document itself rather than giving my harsh criticisms. I have nothing to say about Cleric. It's fine. There was no major changes that I felt were bad or good, or nothing stood out. But I did want to talk about Druid, because Druid saw a lot of changes after the last document. The Druid got Channel Nature. And they said, okay, everyone hates it, so it's gone. Sorry, Druid. You don't get to heal anymore without a class, or with a class feature. Though I do have a thing about healing. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Oh.
But one of the things that I did like that they changed with the Druid is they said, okay, the Druid... Well, I had weird feelings about this with Wild Shape. But they gave stat blocks for Wild Shaping in the last document, where there was like a beast of the land, beast of the sea, beast of the air, and it was just a set stat block, and they would scale with your level and blah, 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 blah. And everyone rejected that thoroughly, you can tell, because they immediately threw it away. And instead, they came back and said, okay, you can be whatever you want to be from the monster manual within CR limitations. However, we're going to limit you in number. So you can only have 3 beast forms memorized effectively, and you have to kind of like swap in between. This is a bit of a compromise. I think it's a weird one because, well, people are just going to pick the best ones anyway, and I don't know. It's a weird choice, but one thing that you'll like is that they don't take HP anymore.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, they don't take the HP when they transform. They keep their own hit points, so... The only thing that changes is just their ability to attack things. The Circle of the Moon subclass, they get temporary hit points when they wild shape equal to the hit points of the thing they wild shape into or some lesser number, whichever is less, and it's almost always going to be the lesser number. It's like three times your druid level or something, and so whichever one is lower is the one that they get the 10 hit points for.
So I want to recap that. So while these changes do seem interesting, obviously they threw out a new concept very quickly, or very early in my opinion, now we're in the position where before it was, with your channel nature ability, that was the way in which you would go about transforming into your beast form.
Yeah, it could be used to either wild shape or it had like a healing thing.
However, now they've just, again, limited you to where it's basically a channel nature, right? Like if there's only a handful of forms that you can swap into, then this... Well,
it's the exact same wild shape from 2014, if you ask me, other than you don't take HP anymore. Huh. And also you can't... So 2014 was really vague. It said you can turn to any beast that you've seen within CR limitations. And the GM would just have to say, okay, what have you seen? And you'd be like, well, here's a big list of all the enemies that I will tell you that I've seen. Because realistically, if you are a new player in a game, like the GM's going to have to take your word for it. And if you make a brand new character, even like you're going to say, oh, yeah, but I saw a direwolf on the road the other day, so I can turn into a direwolf.
And I'd say wholesale, similar to the other element, like Bardic Inspiration, I feel like most DMs are hand-waving the animals that the druid has seen. Mostly because, again, we understand as the Game Master, limiting options for players are not always as fun. They can be fun by limiting options. But in this particular choice, if a player wants to transform into a, I don't know, a T-Rex, yeah, it might be a little busted, but I mean, we can talk about it. I wouldn't just outright say no.
I mean, I agree. If they can... get the CR high enough that it, I think they have to be the circle of the moon to get most of that stuff. Might still be too high, but there's some dinosaurs they can be. The thing that I liked about Wild Shape in terms of changes is they added, I think it's called Wild Resurgence, something like that. They added effectively, you can spend spell slots to Wild Shape. And I think later you can also spend Wild Shapes to spell slot. And I like that. This is a minor change that I go good, because sometimes this was my complaint about the druid in the last playtest document, is that I thought they were too focused on wild shaping, where it was like, hey, if I'm playing a druid, I am wild shaping. That is my entire class, is the ability to wild shape, versus having this minor thing here says, if I don't ever want a wild shape, if that's just not the character concept that I have in mind, I don't have to. I can spin my wild shapes to do other things. And if I really, really want a wild shape and I don't care about casting spells, I can wild shape more often. So I think that's a really nice compromise. I like that. Especially because one of my big complaints in the 2014 version was that you had two wild shape usages until you got to like level 20, at which point you had unlimited. And that seems silly.
Unlike other elements we discussed in terms of taking things away from players, this piece seems really awesome. Players get to use their wild shape mechanic a lot more often. And yeah, that's going to be more fun for the players that do enjoy that style of playing the druid. And the inverse of it even, right? Maybe you're not the type to transform often at all. And you just simply want to be able to cast Goodberry 30 times a day.
That's also a weird spell. But let's talk about the subclasses just briefly. There's three or four subclasses for every class they brought up in this document. They've told us previously that there will be exactly four subclasses for every class when the actual book comes out. So of the three that we ended up seeing for the druid, there was the Circle of the Moon, the Circle of the Land. These two were pretty common. Circle of the Land saw some pretty weird changes to make it more in line, because it wasn't very good before. But then they have the Circle of the Sea, and it just like struck me how boring it was compared to the other two. And I was wondering, are we out of ideas for the druid? Or is that just all we can come up with? We're like, all right, so you can either be a spellcaster druid, or you can be a wild shaping druid. And then they just sit there.
I think with a lot of the classes, as you start to look at the division between what they're capable of in terms of the sub-options, it tends to be very much a dividing line between magical and physical. In fact, you and I have said before, it very much feels like they try really hard to draw the dividing line between what is magical and what is physical. When I know we've been on record in saying we wish that was not so common.
I believe one of the things that you had even read when we were going over this before we started, was it the Ranger?
Yes.
They can, they have their Hunter's Mark, and the Hunter's Mark damage used to just do, you know, whatever damage type they were doing. Now it does force damage. And my perspective is that the only reason for this change is from people that just can't get out of their head how something that is technically classified as a magic spell could deal something other than magical damage. Even though I kind of like the Hunter's Mark concept from 4th edition, which was just, I'm a hunter and I can kind of like pick out my quarry and do some extra damage.
To me, this is the same arbitrary line that prevents classes like the Warlord from being created. So I will forever have an issue with this.
There's two spells that are Ranger exclusive. Well, I guess three counting Hunter's Mark. But there's like Conjure Volley and Conjure Barrage, which is kind of neat that these work with melee weapons now. But they also notably do force damage, which I just thought was funny. It's like you magically conjure a bunch of knives that strike down someone and you couldn't just let me pick a damage type. I just don't know why you couldn't say choose. It's slashing, piercing, or bludgeoning, you know, or maybe based on the weapon you're holding, it does the same damage type. Nope, it's got to be force because it's magic. We already kind of talked about the monk. I don't know that I have too much to say about the paladin. They clarified that the conjure steed was a paladin only spell, which is very disappointing for me. Just because I like it and I want everyone to have it. But I guess Paladin is just the horse guy now, which is fine. Didn't think too much changed in the subclasses. There were some minor ones in there, but nothing really stood out. There's the Ranger. I don't know that I have too much to say about the Ranger other than what we already talked about with their multiple attribute dependency. We've kind of adopted a newer Ranger since, what was it, Tasha's, when they kind of updated a bit of how the Ranger worked. There hasn't been too much change since then. Do know the Beastmaster isn't using stat blocks. It's still using the pre-made blocks, like the Beast of the Sea, Beast of the Land sort of thing, which that seems fine. I think that people can probably let that one go.
And it's probably the thing that you're going to see a lot of the third-party work done for that class, where people come up with like unique solutions for that, unique ideas.
Now, the Rogue, I definitely have more to say. And that's because I complained a lot earlier about how I thought that everything was too similar to the 2014 original release of the Player's Handbook, and the Rogue is not. So expect it to be all cut by the next document. But joking aside, there's a new thing for the Rogue that I really like called a Cunning Strike. Cunning Strike just says when you sneak attack something, so it's after you hit them, before you roll your sneak attack damage, you can deduct sneak attack dice to get extra effects. So one of the things they can do is they can disarm someone. So you could say, okay, so I've got 2d6 for my sneak attack. I'm going to remove one of those d6s. I'm going to deal an extra 1d6 damage, and I'm also going to disarm my opponent. They can also add poison to a weapon while doing this. They can trip someone. They can kind of move out without taking opportunity attacks. And they get more as they level. So it's some of the higher level rogue features give them additional uses for their cunning strike.
I love this. But here comes the sad realization of what could happen. Imagine you have this class that has this very cool, unique way to use abilities that only are specific to them. Maybe even akin to is the awesomeness provided by the Paladin's Summon a Steed, right? But imagine you have this really cool class. You've got these really cool, unique things that only you can do. And then they just get completely reverted. The feedback is, this is too different. This isn't the same as all the other classes. We'd like this to be more like all of the other classes that play similarly.
Thus far, this feels very old D&D, giving up some of your sneak attack dice for different effects. So I think it'll stand. I think, in honesty, I think this won't get entirely cut, but I've been wrong before, so who knows. Overall, though, Rogue is another one of those classes that in the original 5th edition, I found myself pretty bored with. In one of the games you ran for us, Hollis, I was playing a Rogue, and most of the times I was like, yep, okay, I attack with sneak attack, I attack with sneak attack, I attack with sneak attack, and even as a fighter, at least I got multiple attacks, but as a rogue, that's all I ever did was, it's my turn, I attack with sneak attack. So now having like a little bit of choice that I can make, like, oh, I can do a little less sneak attack to get some kind of, you know, advantage in combat. I like that.
Previously from the previous playtest, what I had noted was that the spells, of course, were divided into these different sections. And then after they were divided into these sections, they then got to choose only spells, at least from the start, that were part of that specific spell list that were primal or divine or arcane, if you will. So has this element remained? Has this changed or modified in any way?
Yes, it's been modified slightly, but for the most part, no. The spell lists now, they used to be class spell lists, and they weren't even class spell lists. They just, each spell had a marking of, hey, this is used by this class and this class and this class. But now it's like, okay, there is an arcane spell list, there's a divine spell list, there's a primal spell list. One of the cool little minor things on the bard even that I didn't mention is that the bard isn't just arcane. The bard gets to choose. So the bard can use either the arcane or the divine or the primal when they create their character. They can say, hey, you know what? I'm a primal bard, so I know primal spells. It's a cool idea. I'm fine with that. The minor changes that I mentioned is, for the most part, there's a lot of spells that they've just taken out of these spell lists. I kind of mentioned Find Steed or Summon Steed or whatever it's called. That one has been removed. It is specifically a paladin spell. And then there's Conjure Barrage, Conjure Volley, Hunter's Mark, specifically ranger spells. And there's a few spells, like the smite spells, for the most part, are now specific paladin spells. So these spells have been pulled out of the spell lists. They're class specific.
Do you feel like any of that takes away from certain spell classes, or does it give them each something unique? What's the lens by which you look at that through?
I'm torn. Once again, I like having choices, and if I want to play a pious rogue that can smite with their sneak attack, it sounds fun to me. And I guess maybe I still could with multi-classing, so I'm not going to write it off entirely, but I don't hate it. I think it's fine. If multi-classing didn't feel so punishing in this game, I don't think I would hate it as much. But D&D has always had that hard time where multi-classing is either way too good or way too bad, and they would prefer to err on the side of way too bad, which, I mean, makes sense. I did mention earlier there was a healing thing I wanted to talk about, so let's talk about it. This is not interesting to anyone other than the two of us, and it's just because we've had this conversation already about what school is Cure Wounds in and Healing Word. They noted in here, almost all healing is being moved to Abjuration.
Wow, so that's more in line with what I thought initially. I think I pulled that from like either a previous edition of the game or maybe some other module that I had played where I believe healing had been in the Abjuration School. But now it's official here in what will be 1D&D?
Well, I mean, things can change, obviously. But the bulk of healing spells has changed. So it's not just Cure Wounds, but like Healing Word and a lot of these other, any spell that pretty much has healing in the name is going into Abjuration, which stands the question again of, couldn't we just make a new school called Healing or Recovery or Restoration or who cares what we call it?
Because I bet whatever the spell is that maybe like drains life will clearly be in like the Necromancy
right
subtype.
But once again, this is a very minor thing. I think most people would be like, who cares if it's Abjuration or whatever it is? It doesn't really matter. I just thought it was funny that we literally had to talk about this and then it changed.
It's because they're listening.
I guess so. They were listening to me say that it's been so many schools already, so they decided to make it one more. I don't know that I have too much else in here that was really standing out. Oh, I guess probably the biggest one is every class got a feat at 20th level, one of the special feats, the epic boons.
Oh, cool.
And they removed that in this version.
Oh, no. I liked it. Okay.
So they kind of mentioned, they're like, hey, we're gonna have those come back in some other way. They pretty much weren't like they're gone forever. They were kind of a weird choice to begin with, because to me it always seemed weird that at the basic level of the game, I have no concern about what happens to my character at level 20, because after playing this game for 15 years more, I've never had a character get to level 20. It's just right. Never happened. So it just seems like such a minor part of the game to me that I wondered why they put so much effort into designing it. So I guess other people were wondering the same, and they've just effectively cut it out. It'll probably show up in, I'm going to guess, whatever the Dungeon Master's guide for this version update of D&D is.
Well, usually I try my best not to look ahead. The sheer size of this document kind of pushed me to kind of at least give it a quick glance over a bit before we begin recording. It's important to note from that fact also then, at level 19, it does appear that the characters are allowed to take an ability score improvement. So because they're allowed to take that at level 19, it means that you can actually hit a level, you can actually hit a 22 in a particular ability score. Again, this is very high level, almost max level stuff that most players and game masters will never encounter as even being something they have to worry about. But it is a playtest, so I guess if you want to have you and your table roll up some epic level characters, I don't see why you couldn't.
Giving 19 the ability to break the original attribute or ability score cap is interesting. It is new to this document. It's another one of those, like you said, it's kind of like, cool, I guess. I don't think I'll ever see that. It's mostly irrelevant to me as a player, but cool. If you want me to be able to have a 22, then that can potentially push me to a +6. But here's one of my problems with it, is that if I can have a 22, I feel like I have to. And that means it's not just my decisions that are changing at level 19, it's my decisions leading up to that. I need to make sure that I have a 20 before level 19, so that when I hit level 19, I can bump it up to a 22. Because if I want to have a character that is able to sort of contend with higher end threats, I want them to be like properly optimized. I feel they're going to have that 22 at some point if they can. It's one of these complicated things about just games in general. You know, it kind of gets in your head, even when you're like, I don't have to be optimal, but you kind of want to be.
And it really does depend on the player. I think it's very interesting. Like, for example, if I play a strategy RPG or even card games that I enjoy playing, I very much enjoy the efficiency, the approach at achieving efficiency in those games, because part of the process of figuring out that system and trying my best to manipulate and take advantage of that system is actually kind of the fun for me. I know that there are players that are going to kind of feel that way about their tabletop games. That element is a piece of the game that they enjoy. However, I'm with you. I think I'm more pushed to really care about these things when the game presents those options in a way that incentivize that. If the game were to, example, incentivize some unique choices, then I might be more inclined to take them. In fact, this is going to lead me into my question to you as we wrap up here.
Yeah.
Jeremy, what are you looking forward to see in the following next playtest, assuming we get one that they're even willing to experiment? I'll jump in immediately really quickly and just say, I want to see more feats that encourage unique options or at least unique choices. You had mentioned that there's not really a lot of incentive for maybe like a fighter to even care about being multiple attribute dependent or even leaning that way. But if there was a feat that allowed me as a fighter with maybe 14 intelligence, but that necessitates me having the fighter as my class give me additional options, I take it in a heartbeat. I would love to see what that potential allows me to design a character in this unique way. That way I kind of get out of that same wheelhouse of being, you know, the circle of the moon druid or the circle of the land druid and so on and so forth. Maybe it pushes me to be this weird, unique thing that I never thought possible because the game supports it.
That sounds fantastic. I would love to see some things like that. It reminds me even, I'm not like a huge fanboy of 3.5 or anything, but that was sort of the idea of prestige classes, was that a lot of them had really weird requirements. They forced you to multi-class, sometimes two classes that didn't make a whole lot of sense together. But then eventually you could take this prestige class that would do something really weird or interesting. And it was just kind of a fun thing to build toward. And what that was, the prestige class was the Eldritch Knight was one of them. And it rewarded you for being specifically a fighter who eventually could cast spells, but you were going to need intelligence by the time you got there, so you wanted to level it. Things that I would like to see, I'm hoping that they just kind of take a knife and just cut everything out, and we'll just reduce the book back to 2014 and then just put a new cover on it and then sell it to me again. That's what I'm looking forward to. I'm coming at this one a little bitter. I'm eager for feedback on this episode because this is completely different from every one of our playtest reviews where we've mostly gone through and said, here's the change. Maybe we'll give a little bit of opinion. And we kind of talk at the end about how we feel. But it was impossible for me to go into this document without talking about my feelings, because so much of this was just throwing away a lot of new content that I liked. I was happy to see new things happening. And at this point, the only real new thing that I see from this was the rogue getting to use their sneak attack dice to do other cool things. Why not let everyone do other cool things?
I think it's really hard to divorce our personal feelings from these changes, if for no other reason but because of the amount of time we've spent over the years playing the game. Like a lot of the people that listen, like a lot of other players giving their feedback as well. You spend a lot of time and effort in the not only the prepping of the game that you're going to be playing, but also as a player, you know, hours and hours on multiple nights, multiple weeks, multiple years, getting together, committing that amount of time and developing a craft for something that you love. So to see and get excited about these upcoming changes and to have those kind of ripped away because the feedback is, oh, well, they're too different for a lot of these, that does feel bad. It really does feel like you're being handed or resold the same thing that you already own, which never feels great. This is not the first time that communities have outraged about this sort of thing. Don't worry. I'm certain that no one here is thinking of, I don't know, Blizzard or EA or Call of Duty.
Or 3.5.
Or 3.5. You know, I think that we really want to be able to look at like some new amazing things that they're injecting into the game to make it different from the previous edition. If it's all just going to be a rehash of what we've played before, I'll use the excuse that everyone said when 4th edition happened. I'll just play my old stuff.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, that's what it comes down to, is if I don't like it, I don't have to buy it. But I know that a lot of people are going to, and there's still a part of me that looks at this and says, look, if this could have been patch notes, why wasn't it patch notes? And at this point, it's starting to look a lot like patch notes.
Jeremy, I think this is leading us to a very interesting question that might be worth discussing on another episode.
Yeah.
Are we to the point now where, given how this has been done and how we look at this just as patch notes, is it the case now that D&D might be better suited towards a primary digital format where this is the way patch notes are introduced?
I mean, that's certainly something we can talk about, especially if people are interested in hearing about it. So let us know. Tell us what you think. Like I said, this one was already a little different. I'm sorry to be as spicy as I have been, but, you know, sometimes you got to get it out. Otherwise, you got any leaving remarks for this one?
I'll mirror your sentiment. I feel as though we've been surprisingly negative in this episode, but I think that's there to counterbalance the heavy, hefty amount of positivity I know that we inject with a lot of the other discussions we've had about the game. I think that we're not the only ones that feel this way. And to be honest, I'm really excited to hear about the feedback we get for this episode, as well as the future episodes where we discuss playtests.
Yeah, we'll keep talking about them as they keep coming out, even if we hate them. So, but I hope to love them. You know, I hope we see some better things going forward. And otherwise, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it.
I hope you have a good night. And, you know, surprise, surprise. Looks like the paladin can smite unarmed.